Hello, you're listening to a spoiler-filled film conversation. Hooray!
Wizards! Oh my god, I love wizards. They're so magic-y and old and stuff. Yeah, can't wait. Hello, I'm Richard.
I laughed at you laughing at yourself immediately.
Yeah, well, anyway, that's fine. As I say, I'm Richard. With me for the podcast is Jamie
Hello.
and Abby.
Hello.
So, guys, this week I selected the film Wizards for us all. Jamie will give the details because I hate reading. So, Jamie, to you.
Wizards is an animated film from 1977, directed by Ralph Bakshi, written by Ralph Bakshi. It stars Bob Holt, or the voices of Bob Holt, Jesse Wells, Richard Romanus, David Provell, Mark Hamill, which sounds like a bigger deal than it is because he's in it for about 2 minutes. And just as a quick summary, as provided by IMDb, on a post-apocalyptic Earth, a wizard and his fair folk comrades fight an evil wizard who's using technology in his bid for conquest. Seems simplistic
That makes more sense of
compared
it
to...
than is fair, really.
It crams a lot into 1 hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah, it does. It's definitely a weird film. But yeah, it's essentially about the battle between two different wizards, two brother wizards as well. There's a lot to unpack, so we'll get there. I'll explain why I picked it. That was because we've done a lot of animations. Usually they're nostalgia, like from our childhoods, and we want to revisit something. But I was like, I want to do one I haven't seen, and I want to do kind of a more adult animation. Not like, oh, I want to watch a fucking porn or something strange, like some creepy anime. I want to watch a creepy Western. No, I want to watch like an adult or teenager, I guess. This is sort of teenagery. I don't know. It's got sort
Well,
of. It's from
I
the
think
man who
this
brought you
was.
Fritz the Cat, the film,
Yeah,
so.
I was going to say, have you seen any other Ralph Bakshi
I've seen enough of that to know that I didn't like it. Fritz the
films?
Cat, that is. I don't want to watch any animals with tits schlub about. Oh, it's all very well and good, and I'm sure it's funny satire, but it's just a bit, oh, it's just a bit grubby. So I did, but I did want to, I wanted to dip a toe in the grubby pool of adult sort of fantasy animation. And there's a bunch of it from the 70s and 80s, but it's usually, you know, niche and cult. It's not massive. If it was massively successful, they'd still make them today. You don't really get a lot of, like, adult animation tends to be funny sitcoms on late night TV now. You don't get the fantasy epics that are got boobs in and stuff that was big in the 70s. I don't know. I wanted something like that, and I came across Wizards and thought, this is the fucking weirdest. Why are there Nazis in a kind of Lord of the Rings thing?
I
This
was
looks
not
so odd.
expecting that.
Yeah, I don't know, just something very strange about the concept. So I was like, oh, check this out. Wizards, what the fuck's that? And yeah, Ralph Bakshi, how do you say it? Ralph Bakshi?
Bakshi.
Baxi. So
Bakshi.
Baxi,
No,
he,
shh.
she, Bakshi, I'll get there. He, the only film, I've seen a bit of Fritz the Cat, but it, no. But I'd seen Lord of the Rings. Like, we watched Lord of the Rings at a friend's house very late at night. Probably a bit baked. But, like, we watched Lord of the Rings, or drunk, possibly. And it was so fucking weird looking, because it's got a kind of live action that's animated. It's got, like, footage that's been drawn over.
Yeah, he uses a lot of like rotoscope stuff, and then like there's rotoscoping, and then he does like very early motion capture.
Yeah, it's very, I don't know, like, not primitive animation, but it's a different kind of style, and it's like a mishmash of the traditional cartoon drawn animation with almost photographic collage animation, and it's just fucking weird.
Sometimes it's cool, sometimes it's horrendous.
Yeah, but Lord of the Rings, I mean, it's not, I don't love the film. And I don't love the book. I mean, I haven't read the book. I've read The Hobbit in school. Lord of the Rings wasn't my cup of tea anyway, so it wasn't. I didn't love Lord of the Rings, but it was properly dark and weird, like visually dark, and then plot. It was a darker version than the one everyone's familiar with.
I watched Lord of the Rings after the Peter Jackson trilogy was like done. I think it was like 2004. I think it was someone I know had a VHS copy of it, and I watched it just out of curiosity because I was at the time I was quite a big fan of the Peter Jackson version, and I'd gone through all like the extended versions and stuff. So I was curious to see an older and like different take, because you can tell, especially from this, that Bakshi was already a Lord of the Rings fan.
He's a big nerd. Like,
yeah, before, and there's definitely cool. Yeah, well before it was anyone gave a shit.
Yeah.
I didn't love his version of Lord of the Rings, but it was interesting to watch, and it was also better than the earlier Rankin Bass version of The Hobbit, which was fucking ugly. Ugh, I don't even know how to describe it. I don't like Rankin Bass cartoons. Everyone looks swollen, like they've been stung by several bees, and it all looks fucking gross. And like Ralph Bakshi's stuff looks ugly as well, but in a almost a like deliberate kind of way.
Yeah, yeah. Abby, had you come across any of this guy's stuff before? Did you watch that Lord of the Rings? Do you remember that evening?
I vaguely remember that Lord of the Rings. Based on the style, I think I have seen some other stuff before, but I couldn't tell you for certain. But it all has that very that grubbiness that you mentioned.
Just smutty and a little bit ugly, and like it's like the anime. It's like if Disney did prostitutes.
That's what somebody apparently one of the early criticisms of Ralph Bakshi's films was. It's just Disney, but with tits and swear words. Like,
yeah, but in a way, that's good. Like, everything can't be wholesome.
Disney has stories that make a little bit more sense.
Well, I think with Bakshi, he was more interested in, especially early on, in satire and just like humour and possibly a little bit of like shock value. And I think his move into fantasy with like wizards and stuff was more of an attempt to be a little bit more mainstream, but also still maintain his style, because he did more fantasy after this.
Yeah. I think his stuff is sort of to appeal to teenagers. I wasn't really sure who the fuck this was for, because it feels like it's for adults, but it's also too childlike a story to be for adults. Like, it's too simple a story for adults to give a shit about. And it's not pure satire. But then, so I guess it is aimed at the teenagers who might be into Dungeons and Dragons and that sort of thing, and maybe Conan books.
Especially when this came out in like the late 70s, I can imagine who the audience for this was.
Yeah,
like
comic book nerds who are a little bit more older and hornier, and so this is like a bit, but also this is like their South Park in a way.
It didn't have, you know, this is appealing to an audience at the time that didn't have a lot of people trying to appeal to them, like now.
It was very separate, like children's stuff and then adult stuff. There was no in between, and this is the one of the few in betweeny bits. Anyway, I think it was worth looking at just because it was so. It's such a weird thing, and it's sort of like I found it, you know, having watched it now, I found it a bit frustrating because I felt like it needed more money and effort. But like they had a low budget, and it's like they were trying their best, but it doesn't make a lot of sense. But then you're kind of thinking, is it meant to be like some psychedelic drug trip? Is it meant to be a bit more like a fucked up art piece than it is a narrative drama?
I think there's more. It's almost the 80s at this point, but it feels like it's still coming at it from the sort of counterculture roots that Bakshi came up through with cartoons and animation. That's why I think it has so many really, like, not satirical, but like blatant references to modern society, like the callbacks to what the world was. Because it's a weird setup that I wasn't expecting. The idea of like it being post-apocalyptic, but like tens of thousands of years in the future after the world has risen from the ashes kind of thing. And it's become this bizarre fantasy Lord of the Rings type thing with fairies and elves.
It's an odd suggestion that because it's a, in many, if you take away the it's set in the future, it's not really in any way a sci-fi. It's a fantasy movie because it's about wizards, elves, you know, fairies.
Yeah.
And swords and sandal adventure stuff. But I mean, obviously a key factor to this story is going to be technology as well.
Yeah.
But it's a really fucking weird premise anyway, because it starts with the apocalypse has happened years ago, and now it explains it in the weirdest way. Like, humans have survived and have become sort of mutant monsters, if they survive at all. And in the areas that are okay on Earth, all the magical creatures that were there before have thriving now. So, like, elves and, I don't know, fucking leprechauns and fairies are back. And they live in the good bits of the world and have, you know, I don't know, bred and become... Like, there's just two sides, isn't there? There's the muted, horrible people who survived after the apocalypse and have evolved. And then, oh, fairies are thriving once again for some reason.
Yeah, it's the whole Lord of the Rings thing. You've got Scorch, which is basically Mordor.
Yeah.
And then you've got... So the two, like, the protagonist and the antagonist are brothers, and they're both wizards. And
well,
they were born out of, like,
this whole explanation is stupid. Like, it's...
It's very fantasy.
The queen of the fairies, is it? Or elves? I can't remember. I think
it's well, whichever.
She gets banged by a mysterious dark storm, and instantly is pregnant and has twins for fucking no reason. And then one of them is a good twin. Like, one son is good and nice, and is nice to his mum, and is a pleasant child. And the other one is a twat who doesn't even visit his mum, and is all angsty and emo and horrible. And they become these, and then over thousands of years, they become two rival wizards. And I just, there's no reason for the storm, and then a pregnant fairy queen. It just happens.
This isn't the kind of film that you can apply your normal attempts at putting real-world logic to it.
But why even explain it if it doesn't... Like, there's a wizard and another wizard. We don't need... It could be straightforward without having them to have
gives them some kind of foundation for their characters and why they have that back and forth. And...
But it's so random. Like, Abby, what did you make of this, like, opening story?
There's a lot of stuff in this that they should really have integrated into it. And just heavy exposition every now and again is really difficult to take.
And they had, it's like the opening section and a few different moments were like, instead of animated, it was stills with Susan something. She's not credited. There's like an actress who has an interesting voice. Like, she sort of sounds a bit like, she sounds like a sort of baked model describing the fantasy story, and she explains over beige drawings, like, it's sort of...
I really like the
illustrations in these bits. Or...
Yeah, the like fairy tale style illustrations.
I like them; they look really good. But it's not animated, and therefore you'd probably expect it to be. But then again, it is a device. It's like a storybook thing, isn't it? Like,
yeah, and Susan Tyrell was the name of the narrator.
She was good. But I don't know why she wouldn't want to be on the credits.
I feel like Ralph Bakshi had far more material for this film than they could afford to put in. That's why there had to be all of these, like, chunks of exposition. And, like, the story starts out very slowly and then really rushes to a conclusion. Although I will say that does benefit in the end with the actual conclusion of the brother's story, which I thought was fantastic.
But there's definitely we're going to take our time to character build, and then, oh, fuck, this happens. It's very, like, rush through Lord of the Rings style shit.
It reminded me of, in Ralph Bakshi's version of Lord of the Rings, the same thing happened, where he couldn't get the budget secured to do the battle scenes he wanted to, and he did the same thing for that he did for this, which is the rotoscoped armies on horseback. He may have even reused some of it for one or the other of the films, but I see what he's going for, But I didn't like that in Lord of the Rings, and I don't like it here. But I kind of appreciate that at least it looks different. Like
the whole thing felt like a student rushing to meet the deadline of his brief. Like, yeah, and let's get the gist of what we wanted to do with as best as we can.
I feel like having, because I've seen quite a bit of Ralph Bakshi's other stuff, I always feel like he was under pressure from someone or other, an executive or from a studio, and he was always trying to push back against it or, you know, get something finished because people were, you know, he very much makes his own thing. And I can imagine studio executives being like, yeah, but can you make it more like
normal,
you know,
please?
Disney? Yeah. And he's like, it's too sort of...
It's too weird and out there. And
yeah, which, yeah. And I do feel like, given the right amount of money and freedom, he could, like, especially with something like this, that he's clearly trying to build a world out of it, he could do something really cool, but it's like he's too constrained.
I agree, that is partly the case. I think his style and the different ideas he comes up with to visualise the film is creative and interesting. Like, actually, Abby, it's one of the things I want to talk to you about, because one of your comments while watching it was, I like this, but these look ugly and I can't stand them. There's a lot of different styles. I think basically we have the narrated sections in beige, which are beautiful illustrations of fairies and elves and wizards, and it explains things. We got dark, like sketchy backgrounds with colourful characters on sometimes. Video footage that's altered to look like animation with again, the colourful, traditional-looking cartoons on top. And then, does anyone remember any other types that we kind of get collaged in?
I mean, I like the mix in certain cases of, like, live action. I mean, you've got all the war footage later on.
Yeah, some of that's like, literally war footage, and then some of it's, like, psychedelic coloured-in war footage as well.
The issue I had with that was I felt like I didn't quite get what was going on.
That
until,
happens a lot, you know.
Yeah, but then when the projector comes in, I was like, oh, so it's literally, like, this is a representation of what they're seeing. Like, the projector is putting it in their heads or in front of them in some way. And that was enough at that point. I was like, okay, I see there's
a bit of vagueness as to... There's a big plot point hinged on a wizard coming across a projector of propaganda from... not even propaganda, it's like Nazi... film footage, but it's presented as propaganda that is being projected in the sky. But is it in their head? Is it the background? Is it just a stylistic arty thing? That's
I kind of took it as
interpretation. I think.
Yeah, I kind of put it as it, I kind of took it as it was putting.
They're being brainwashed.
That, yeah, it was like instilling those images
the
in
values
the enemy's minds. Yeah, and but I mean, using it against
the goodies.
It was like putting those images in their head and horrifying them to the point that they were paralysed so they could just be taken out. Again, I think that's Bakshi's old sort of, not satirical, but like cultural commentary.
Style. It's an interesting idea to bring in Nazi propaganda to the world of fantasy.
I did not see it coming, so yeah. I was quite surprised when there was suddenly some very, very blatant, like, oh, he's actually using literal historical stuff that was horrifying and happened.
Well, Abby, maybe some of your reaction and thoughts on the different art styles and which ones worked for you and which ones you liked or enjoyed and which ones you didn't.
I liked all of them except for the main art style, which I thought was ugly and... just too simple compared to everything else that was happening. So I was disappointed every time one of the segue sections ended and we had to go back to the normal thing.
Yeah, Bakshi has a really distinctive style. I feel like it's hard to translate it into actual moving animation, because if you look at the pieces of art that are the illustrations for the expositional scenes, it's clearly his style as well, but because they're still images, he can sort of load it with all that detail that he likes to do and those weird proportions and stuff. But
motion. It felt like an illustrator was trying to make an animation, because illustrators can do a beautiful painting or a beautiful piece or a storybook, but that isn't the same thing as making a character move. You have to keep it simple, and you know, like animation has to cut corners, and it can't do that when you're so, you know, stylistic and like so detailed, isn't it?
I feel like some of his earlier films look better in terms of the actual animation, and it might be because of the limitations that were on this and the kind of scope that he was he's trying to go for, that it ends up hurting some of the actual animation style.
Yeah. So, Abby, for you, it's difficult because our protagonists are in the cartoony style that you don't like.
Yeah. And they do it really lazily as well. Well, like Avatar, for example, they very rarely show his eyes, his mouth. They've got the simplest animation job, so he looks kind of boring.
Well, he looks like a leprechaun sheriff with giant feet, which he holds a cigar in because his hands are not available, even though they are.
And he sounds like Columbo, because apparently the performance by Bob Holt was deliberately made to sound like Peter Falk.
It was very odd, and because he's got a cigar as well.
At one point, he even says just one more thing before he kills his brother at the very end.
Yeah. So, and he's a short, squat, cartoony, you know, he's a typical-looking wizard, apart from he looks a bit leprechaun-y because he's green and got like a star on his hat and things, and I don't know, he's interesting enough, but an odd choice of maiden character, I suppose.
I found him the most likeable character because he was more of the...
He's like a reluctant curmudgeon of a character as well.
Yeah, but he also had that, like, New York attitude kind of thing.
I liked it. I thought he was funny. It's an odd, like, usually, like, in a satire, I don't know, like, even a story about a wizard is kind of weird because they got powers and it's like, you need your protagonist to be an underdog or something.
Yeah, it's not what you expect from a typical fantasy, and it's also not what you get from a lot of the other characters in it.
Yeah.
So he stands out.
So anyway, Avatar is this wizard, and he's the one of the two brothers who are feuding through thousands of years. But his gang of merry men, I guess, are well. Let's talk about it because this is a big factor. What's her name? Eleanor.
Eleanor, yeah.
The fairy queen or princess or something.
Yeah.
She is a voluptuous, hard nippled, big boobed. fairy lady.
Ralph actually really likes women and likes drawing them a lot.
And their boobies,
like,
and their nipples.
Yeah, it's. I mean, fine, whatever. It was the 70s, but like, I like the character design of her is like, okay, how can I like make her naked without actually making her completely naked?
The most sultry pornographic fairy. Yeah, and it's got to be a tick box for young men and boys and things, aren't they? They've got to like the film because of that.
Yeah, this is of that like ilk of
if you're 30,
animated films that clearly have that appeal. This and like heavy metal as well.
Yeah,
like, and I think one of his follow-ups to this was Fire and Ice, which is like a Conan style fantasy, and again, lots of animated tits spilling out of things. Yeah. Like, it's just, yeah, he's very much like, I can imagine him drawing these pictures just alone. Like, I'm just practicing.
Yeah.
But the weird thing about Eleanor was, initially, she's an annoying character because she's very giggly and like, just tits everywhere. And I'm like, oh God, this is really, I feel gross.
She's super up for it as well. She's like, there's lots of, sex with you implications all the time. Yeah,
but then as it goes on, I actually found myself starting to like warm to her, and that stuff gets dialed back as it goes on. She actually seems to develop somewhat as a character.
Yeah, she has surprised me.
Yeah,
she has a little story arc and dilemmas and things. Like she flip flops. Like she gets put in jeopardy, but she also, you know, she has a harrowing story. We will talk about this character, but her father dies, and then she's, you know, one of the assassin of her father joins the team, and it's kind of she ends up killing him and things, and it's like there's quite a, you know, complex little story of being brainwashed or kidnapped and vengeance and revenge. Yeah, like, she's got a lot going on for her from her perspective in the story.
Whenever that, yeah, whenever her story picks up and she has that whole thing with the robot who was something 99 at first,
Necrocon,
and then he gets,
is it Leprechaun?
I think it's 99. Yeah, and then he gets called Peace. Like, yeah, and he's on their side, but he's in a like internal battle with. He's basically Gollum. He's having that internal like push and pull fight with himself to help people, but also be one of the villains. But
yeah, he's interesting because he's the only character on the poster. And there's this red. He looks a bit like a saggy version of Bender from Futurama in red, and he's like this mostly silent assassin programmed to kill, you know, Avatar. Generally be an assassin for the baddies. And he rides a sort of two-legged horse, camel, round alien ball thing, like mutant.
Yeah, camel. Those gross horse things.
Yeah, I don't know. And he's an interesting character that doesn't talk until he gets kind of reprogrammed or talked to or break. Like, I don't know, there's a whole thing that I can't understand properly. But he's an interesting character. He doesn't look a lot like a robot, really. He just looks like a sort of fleshy army man, like a saggy suited army man.
It's like a robot made of like sacks and plastic instead of metal. Like it's just odd. Like saggy and floppy.
But he kills a very visually striking and ugly character. President of
They call him blood. That, but like. She's his daughter and is a princess, and I was like, that's not how it works.
They just don't have a grasp of politics or government.
But I think the idea is that it's, you know, this is way far in the future, and it's doing that thing where, like, happens in, you know, in almost any post-apocalyptic movie or story is, like, terms from the old world are taken and then, like, either misunderstood or reappropriated, so... It's familiar words, but being used for different or wrong or like vaguely related things, which, you know, fine. But he's a very odd character.
He's like a lanky Mariel type looking dude, and he's got this mask that's somewhere between like one of those old fashioned medieval doctor masks or like a grotesque punch doll.
Yeah,
like it's just an ugly, confusing looking dude, and he's annoying sounding. And then he's shot by a robot character.
That's really harrowing.
We're all on this like, whimsical cock-based... it's like a cock-shaped little hill fort that Avatar lives on. And they're setting them up and having a bit of banter and comedy. And then, there's a murder and assassination happens.
It's like... that's the thing that stood out. And again, it pulls this away from being a kid's film... is that it's surprisingly violent. It doesn't shy away from blood. There's no like clean deaths in it for the most part, especially towards the end. It gets really bloody.
People get yanked by swords or shot by laser guns, and it's not really gory either. It's not like blatantly horrible, but it is oddly. I mean, but then that's swords and fantasy. A Dungeons and Dragons game would have murder in it, so. Abby, what do you make of the kind of adult tones and maybe even just the violence? Do you think it sat well?
This is another one of those films that doesn't know what it is. Are you a very sort of serious war allegory? Are you a sort of sex comedy? Are you just a whimsical fantasy? It doesn't pick at anything. It just keeps jumping around all over the place.
All of those things together are the 70s.
Yeah, and this film.
It feels very of its time.
Yeah,
which is, you know, it can be a good or a bad thing depending on what you think of movies and animation in the 70s and like.
Yeah.
But you don't often see particularly animated films that have a kind of 70s feel to them. The 70s, I think, is more associated with things like New Hollywood and you know, the emergence of like blockbusters and live action stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things like this film, like blaxploitation movies were going out, crime thrillers were happening, even sci-fis, like, I mean, Star Wars was coming out at a similar time. Like, there's a lot of the elements of this are in other films, but nothing, no animation tackles all of this new Hollywood grubbiness.
Everything in this film is a hallmark of it being an underground film. other than, you know, rather than mainstream, but it's an underground film trying to be more geared towards like fantasy and sort of typical movie storytelling, as opposed to saying something or, you know, yeah, satirizing something or being, having a political message, which is, that's fine, but doesn't necessarily lend itself to appealing to a particularly big audience.
No. It is, in a way, you know, it's for people studying history and also into D&D. Like, it will work for them because it's a little bit sexy. It's a little bit, like, referencing things you're just learning about in as a student. You know, it's kind of... It works for nerds who think, you know, but it... Then it's also, it's kind of cool for art students, but then it's not, it doesn't really succeed in any one way, like, because like Abby was saying, it's trying to be a lot of things, and it doesn't really land any of them, I'd say.
Yeah, it's well, again, this, I think this, the impression I got is, this is, it's the same as the amount of world building and storytelling it attempts to do, is there's not enough money or even, like, runtime to do everything.
Get it all in. It should have, so maybe, like, maybe pick a simpler story if you're going to do, like... But it's a lot of time, money and effort, considering... Like, animation is painstaking, and they obviously cut corners, but this is a... To get this signed off is, like, well done, because this doesn't make enough sense.
To even get it made, yeah.
Yeah, it's like an accomplishment in itself.
There is, like... And I think I have a similar thing to Abby with... There are parts of the film that I thought, oh, this is really ugly and kind of just annoying to sit through. But then there are other parts of it that were fantastic to look at. And one of the ones that stood out to me, just as an example, is there were a couple of shots of, I think it was of Scorch, the kingdom where Black Wolf, Avatar's...
Yeah, we need to talk about him a bit. Yeah, go on.
But there's these shots of, you can't quite tell what it is, like, it's very abstract, but it's these very mechanical structures that are all like very rigid, mixed in with sort of old like fairy tale castles and squat houses, but it's all grey, like, and charcoal. But then the mechanical stuff is extremely detailed. And really, it looks really complex. And there are a couple of shots where that's not moving, but the actual shot itself is moving. And then there's a line of, like, I don't know what they're supposed to be, but
henchmen,
they're these...
or robot assassins or something.
No, they're these creatures that have been... They look like they've been hung or strung up.
But I thought, I thought they were the... Do you know, like, we see with a few different assassins? I thought it was, like, robot parts that were going to get...
I mean, it doesn't clarify it. It doesn't
hanging characters,
and they've got almost like they're black, but with sort of red, almost like burning charcoal kind of texture to them, and they just go from one end of the screen to the other, and it doesn't necessarily mean, like, it's not establishing a physical location. It's just giving you a feel for this part of the map that the stories taking place on. Stuff like that was really cool. The more kind of odd or abstract, but still drawn or animated sequences. Yeah. And I was going to say, Black Wolf, I like his character design. I like that he has bone arms.
I don't understand that at all. So, like,
he's a monster.
Yes,
like,
but...
He's like Grendel from Beowulf. Like, he's this monstrous, deformed...
He's an old wizardy looking man, like long grey beard, bald, evil looking eyes, long, like kind of gown thing. And then he's got gloves, but then for no fucking reason, his forearms are just skeleton arms.
Because it looks gross and off putting and kind of cool,
But it doesn't make. We got a leprechaun versus fucking half formed zombie bloke.
Well, I mean, it's the light and the dark idea, isn't it? Like, they're visually representing different ends of the spectrum. So he's this, like, skeletal wizard thing. And then Avatar, his brother, looks like he should be on a cereal box.
Yeah. I'm still bothered by the no rhyme or reason for it. He's not a zombie. He's a wizard. He's just an old...
You don't have to have an explanation for everything.
But you should. I mean, you had a good point before that, is... It doesn't establish locations. I mean, it does a bit, but it doesn't so much establish a location as give you a vibe with illustrations. Like, it gets loads of montages of footage and images and characters. It doesn't say, we are at this location and they are travelling here. Like, even when Necron 99 or whatever sets off, it's all atmospheric. He's on his little comedy horse, but he's moodily on, like, outlined on cliffs, and there's like this 70s jazzy shit going on.
The music, yeah. The music is actually, though, you know? The music, I would say, is a very good representation of what Abby said about the tone being all over the place, because, like, some of it is like I think the opening credits music was really cool, because it's just a very, like, dirgy kind of synth. It almost reminded me of the synth stuff in Apocalypse Now. But then, like, the battle scenes have this, like, funky guitar playing.
It's so good. Like, you got monsters with swords going to battle, kind of with Nazi shit going on. Like, Nazis and robots and monsters. And they're going to war, and it's like... It's like the funkiest 70s shit. You know, it's so psychedelic and great.
This doesn't fit, but also, this is kind of cool.
I haven't seen that in anything else.
Yeah.
Abby, did you enjoy this sort of weird 70s music with the imagery and things? Is that something that works for you?
Not enough. It was novel, but I was just like...
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem is the battle sequences take up, for me at least, take up too much of the film.
Yeah, because they're very stylistic and very, like, they're interpretive rather than, like, it's not, it's odd because it's footage of things that looks animated, and then cartoons, like cartoon elves and fairies, like, tooled up, fighting monsters that are sometimes drawn, sometimes silhouetted, like real footage that's been animated, and it just all cuts together. It's just, it's the idea that they're fighting rather than people actually choreographed to fight.
And it's like, every now and again, there are images in there that are cool. There was one that stood out to me of a guy on a... I think he was either on top of a tank or on, like, the wing of a plane, and he stands up, and it's an actual person that's been drawn over, and he's all black from head to toe, but he's got, like, this big red mouth and these giant red eyes. Yeah. And it's just a really brief shot, but I thought that is really cool. And there's also a guy playing an organ at one point, who's similarly, like, completely in shadow, clearly an actual person, and he's got, like, green light in, like, where his mouth and eyes would be.
It's just a really cracking portfolio of an art student, an art student, you know? Like, it's this fabulous 70s style fantasy, and then the war mixed in. It's like a really great fucking A-star art project, but you've put it all in an animation, and it just, it's fine, but it's like a showreel of cool art rather than coherent. It's fine having neo-Nazi planes and tanks combined with, like, Zulus that are coloured in and monsters and then knights on horseback, but you can't just watch that. That doesn't make enough sense, does it?
Like Abby said, the a lot of the stuff in the expositional storybook type sequences could have been taken out of those and put into actual, you know, scenes, animated scenes, and then the battle sequences could have been shortened so that those images are more striking because there's less of them.
It's a quick burst of violence and imagery.
But at the same time, those sequences being animated, like, you can tell where they had to cut corners with the animation because of the budget. And it is interesting that this and Star Wars were being made at the same time, and Lucas and Bakshi, I guess, knew each other in some... because that's how Mark Hamill is in both. But they also were both having the same budget issues in that, you know, they were being made, but the studio financing them was saying, what the fuck is this? No, we're not giving you any more money.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about our protagonists and the story that's going on as well then. Because there's one, I guess, one more of the posse was... Weehawk, kind of your more hero type. He's your gallant warrior, so he's an elf as well. He's like a stupid horse thing.
He's like a mix of Frodo and Aragorn, sort of combined into one character.
And he's like a kind of brave warrior. He's the first one to fight Necron 99, when he's just an assassin for the baddie, and his like friend is murdered. They have like a fucking horse funeral, and also he kills he kills Necron's horse, and there's quite a cool dramatic fight between them, and it's where actual animated characters do fight, and it looks a bit odd, but it's not one of the montages of battle. It's a literal, the two cartoon characters have a battle.
I like how much the voice actor Richard Romanus put into screaming as we walk.
I did like his voice. There's a lot of good voice acting. They almost didn't fit the cartoony. Like, the cartoons were the sort where you go, oh, this is great voice acting, but the cartoons aren't doing justice to bringing life to the words, you know? Like, they're a little bit primitive at times.
Yeah, there is a lot of character in the voice acting. Like, it does... Yeah. The cast is definitely putting a lot into the work that they're doing.
Yeah, and they're funny interactions with each other. It's quite a comedic film at times. Like, they have a lot of banter and like little scenes. Like, I quite like enjoyed this like these masked sort of soldier guys that are a little bit like Nazis.
Oh yeah.
And they every now and again there's a couple of bumbling soldier henchmen that have arguments or get into little problems.
A few of them were Ralph Bakshi voicing both and just having a back and forth with himself.
And they're funny. Like, they're a bit. Some of the comedy's a bit broad, but it is like, it is enjoyable. These little segments where moronic soldiers. Because like, one of the things with the bad guy, his army of mutants and things, they kind of get distracted and can't, like, they haven't got any focus, so they need this projected propaganda to motivate them.
Yeah, he can't.
They're kind of an incompetent bunch of mutants that are too thick to get anything done. Which is kind of interesting. It's also a very strange sequence where, so the baddies are all, like, killing elves and fairies and all of the good guys, and just, like, there's a lot of murder to establish things, and they got prisoners and they don't know what to do with them, so they visit a couple of short bearded religious figures in a sort of teapot castle.
This is the and they say they have to pray, and they pray for 5 hours,
and
it's
they dance.
Probably the most 70s bit of animation I've seen in a long time, and they go through different ceremonies from different real world religions that are like, they do them really quickly and cartoonishly.
And they dance around in a silly way after a while, like vaudeville style. And their religion is based on the old technology of the past. And so they have loads of these religious relics of, like, you know, Coca-Cola lids and just crap from the past. And it's just this weird, what the fuck is this section? And then all that happens is they dick around for so long that the soldiers just blow them up. And, I don't know, murder the prisoners. They just, I don't know why he was just in there as a bit of a laugh and a poke fun at religion or something.
It's a very, very 70s cartoon satire type thing.
Abby, let me hear your thoughts on some of the actual narrative. Like, outside, you might not visually like the characters, but did you find the band of people who had united as goodies to go and fight the baddie, did you enjoy what they had to go on?
You mean the series of dead ends that they went down?
Yes. Continue your deadpan thoughts.
Oh, we're somewhere cold. Where I actually point to Avatar for giving her a coat when they were walking in the snow.
Yes, I was impressed that actually happened in the film.
It was a cagoule rather than a fur coat, which they mention as a kind of flaw. Go on, Abby. Other bits? Go on. Dead ends. And there's a spider that's killed at some point. A large spider.
That actually did give me fright, because I was watching this with headphones, and the spider fucking screams out of nowhere.
Well, that's the thing. Like that spider thing was another example of things that happen but don't actually influence anything.
The perils of the road, isn't it? You know.
Again, it's very Lord of the Rings. It's they're walking from point A to point B, and things happen on the way. But the problem is they don't have enough of a budget to make enough significant things happen.
Yeah.
But with Lord of the Rings, say, the stuff that happens to them is of consequence.
Depends if it relates or not.
Well,
I think from
Tom
what I can
Bombadil
recall,
is not of consequence.
No, but like what Abby. Abby, come on.
No, I know what you mean.
She's right, because in Lord of the Rings, you go through an area and the monsters are defeated, and then that affects things. Like in this, we don't know where they are. Things just happen. Is that what you're on about, Abby?
Yeah, and they don't even they don't even carry on necessarily. Like, she murders Redbot.
Yeah.
But when they find her again, she was like, oh, I'm sorry, I was mind controlled. And then it's just fine.
Yeah.
Oh, the that scene, actually, because I kind of assumed that whenever she... There's that whole sequence where she holds Peace's hand to try and comfort him, and it lets his guard down. And then whenever Black Wolf, like, appears in the sky to try and influence him, he gets into her head and she turns on them. And then later on, when Weehawk finds her, he calls her a slut and smacks her in the face. I was like, Jesus Christ. All right, and then, I get the idea. And then
Black Wolf's wife, who has a little baby, is like, don't be a dickhead. Don't slap her around and kill her.
Oh, fuck, she was mind-controlled. Brutally dark sequence whenever he's... Like, I guess he's gotten her pregnant, and then the wise men he has say it's going to be a mutant, and the implication is he's going to, like, murder the child? I was like, fuck, this is... Oh.
Yeah, but it's a road journey for a group of, like, fantasy characters. And we have sections where, oh, they've met some small fairies, and then Peace or Necron or whatever is like, are we... Oh, he talks like a bit like a basic idiot once he's been reprogrammed or convinced to help good. And so he's like, Avatar's convinced this assassin robot to join them and help. And they kind of need him to find Black Wolf, because that's where he's programmed and come from there. And so there's this weird thing where Necron's like, oh, don't go, Pieces, don't go in there. These little fairies are going to be... They're not trustworthy. And everyone's like, ah, fuck off, it'll be fine. And then they're all sort of confused. I think Mark Hamill's fairy turns into a big pink rat for no reason.
But no, I don't think that's not him.
Oh, well, one of the fairies turns into a pink rat, a giant pink rat. But there's lots of dicking around with the mischievous fairies are sort of fucking over our protagonists.
That was probably the sequence I did dislike the most, because I was like, oh, this is just like, and again, I was watching it in headphones, so all the really like high pitched laughing was, oh, I get it. I get the idea that like Weehawk in particular is like, you know, I liked him being like barbarians to these weird little nymphs that are just tickling people, and he's disgusted by it. That was fine. Something about that sequence just irritated the shit out of me, and I don't know what it was.
Well, I think it's strange, because it's faffing around. Like, Eleanor's like held prisoner for a bit. I think that's the scene anyway, but like... She's kind of cuffed to two pillars with gargoyles on, and she tries to use her magic, and she makes a gargoyle dinosaur thing come to life. And then that starts attacking the fairies and her, and she can't control it, and it's a problem.
I did like the gross design of that gargoyle with its weird mouth.
Sure. Avatar plays it all cool and tries to stop it, and then that makes the little fairy who's in charge decide, oh, you're cool. Like, it's just sticking
around.
They
shot him with an arrow, because...
And he didn't flinch, like...
Yeah, he doesn't attack them back, so that's proof that he's not going to do anything, so they just stay out of it, which...
But it's all of this faffery, but it's just to have a bluff, so that we think Necron has turned evil. Because, like, one of the fairies, Mark Hamill, who's briefly in it and has no point, he's just a character that talks, and then he's, like, one of the fairies is shot.
He gets shot, yeah.
And so everyone's like, oh, shit, Necron has betrayed them, and, like, he's still working for Black Twat with his skeleton arms, like, but it's just a bluff because it's the other assassins, and it's like, it's just a fucking, it's they're just dicking around trying to create drama that doesn't go anywhere.
I think the part of the problem is because the film is such a mix of very abstract imagery representing sort of tone, atmosphere, ideas of like battle and conflict,
concepts that there
are the sequences where things are actually like physically happening
and stories are being told.
A lot of it comes across as kind of unclear, and I think it's partly the limitations of the animation, and partly because you're never quite sure what you're what to expect.
They're just token fantasy elements that would be in a book. They're not a coherent purpose. There are good characters. There are fairies. We don't get told what types of fairies there are in the world. There's just different sizes and shapes and shit. And so we don't know enough to be able to understand why it matters about this scene. Like, there's another one where they're on a different segment of the journey. They come across some, like, Viking barbarian type.
Yeah, the guys who
elves
knew
or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're gearing up to war. They do have a battle, but there's a lot. There's a bit of, like, arguing back and forth with Avatar, and there's the sort of. They go back. Oh, let's do some storytelling. Characters interacting, things happening, gearing to war, differences of opinion. But it's like not for anything, is it? It's just.
Well, he doesn't. Yeah, he doesn't. I can't even remember that character's name, the Viking leader guy, but he doesn't come back again. Like, he doesn't.
He's just assumed to be in the big battle between the technology-fueled monsters and the magical warriors.
The impression that, you know, were it longer or had more money, he would have been a character of more consequence because he's introduced as one.
Well, we could have had a TV series where it could take time to tell different stories every week. It would have made sense to have this episode be about meeting the Viking elves. Is this what you mean, Abby, by the fantasy elements of story that we can hold on to? They're sort of arbitrary and on their own and have no bigger purpose. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, they're so transient. Mm. They're just... And now this thing, and now this thing, and now this thing, and now that guy's dead.
And considering we can't follow it all the time anyway, like, it's quite hard to follow at times because of how interpretive it is, it makes it all the more difficult to care what's going on.
I think the issue that I would imagine a lot of people would have with the film is that it's difficult to be interested unless you're looking at it as a Ralph Bakshi film, and, like, more analysing it than watching it.
Yeah, you have to,
it's not,
you have to be thinking about what it's trying to say, how it says it, and
yeah,
thinking about
where
the
it is
styles.
In like where it is in like the history of you know, animated movies and that kind of stuff. Like, if you're just going to be watching it to try and like watch a, you know, a story that is going to engage you and entertain you and then leave it alone, it is potentially going to be really difficult to get anything out of it.
It basically comes across like the animated equivalent of, you're too scared to take LSD or do drugs, so just watch this. Get a feel for what it might be like to do drugs. Like, it's just so weird, and if you're trying to make sense of it, it's frustrating but kind of funny and baffling. Like, a lot of the time, it's funny because what the fuck is happening now? What are those things? There's little dinosaur mutants, but they're... Like, there's kind of a funny scene thrown in. There's just some fairy, slaggy-looking fairy prostitute.
Oh,
it's
the
almost like... It's like in fucking Blade Runner 2049, where there's just some slightly lame prostitutes and, like...
2049's been.
Oh, yeah. One of the Blade Runner-y numbers.
Blade Runner 2.
Blade Runner 2, Return of the Blades. But, like, there's just a scene where there's, like, a little happy monster meeting some skanky-looking fairy prostitutes.
I did like the... Because that's very early in the film, but it's such a... Like, I was like, oh, yeah, I can tell this is Ralph Bakshi because of, like, the prostitutes being so exaggerated in their, like... You know, their postures are sort of off and weird, and their boobs are like hanging down, and you can see their nipples through the tops because, of course, you can. And then on the other end of the street, they're seducing this, again, cartoon character who looks like he should be on a kid's cereal box.
Yeah.
And he like literally makes boing noises when he runs over the road to them. But I think that's...
It works, though, because it's just background texture for, like, one of our characters is moving through the scene. And it's world-building. And I'd prefer more world-building instead of slightly interpretive shit battles where, like, there's even a moment where, like, an old warrior, like, in the trenches of the war, there's, like, an old elf is telling a young elf, oh, we'll win, we'll always win.
Yeah, I liked that scene. Yeah. And that was, again, surprisingly harrowing, because, like... That one moment where you see that child that he was reassuring, like, everyone's dead and he's just, like, shivering in fear in the trench. I was like, holy fucking hell, this is...
I want to see the world, and we get more just interpretive battles to explain stuff. Like, it's a shame, because I think Bakshi's got this... I like the idea of a blaxploitation-style fantasy. Not even blaxploitation, just exploitative, sexified crime world, but it's swords and sandals and Vikings and elves and weird shit. Like it's
but
fantasy,
with that attitude of like a grindhouse kind of feel to it,
like adult vibe. And that you have your kind of traditional hero arc, but have it satirical and set in that world. But instead, we just get an art project, which is too weird to follow, really. It's such a shame that it isn't more focused or didn't have more money, because there's some good elements to it. It's just they don't all coalesce and make sense together.
I do, talking about good elements, I do want to talk about what is probably my favourite scene.
Go on.
Which is the final confrontation between the two brothers.
So I know that Abby thinks this was a bit shit and a cop-out. That's
why I liked it, though, because I was... The film, I think at that point, it's got, 8 minutes left, and I was like, a lot's hinging on the next 8 minutes, and I'm not quite sure how they're going to manage to do this.
Yeah, so after the big battle... Sorry, go on, Abby.
It's not so much that he shot him that I don't like. It's that they completely no-sold it. They didn't even make it dramatic.
That's what I liked about it, though, because it was so sudden and on the nose that I, laughed. And part of it is the performance of the voice actor, I've forgotten his name, Bob Holt. The fact that I could tell he was sounding like Peter Falk on purpose. And then, we've talked about this before, when did Columbo start? He literally says just one more thing.
Yeah.
And then he talks about a magic trick that their mother showed him. Yeah, 1971 was Columbo. And then he starts pulling up his sleeves, and I thought he was going to do something weird, and then he did that, just one more thing. I'm glad you changed your last name, you son of a bitch. And then just pulls a gun and shoots him. And I think it's the son of a bitch that got me.
What a weird time to bring up the name change. Suddenly we're bringing sense and rationale. Oh, yeah, that's right. He does. I hadn't even thought that. He's called Avatar, one's called... I don't know.
Why?
I hadn't thought about it. And then he brings it up when he murders him.
But A, he shot him. B, it worked.
Yeah.
And I liked the way they animated Black Wolf. Because he shoots him in the chest, and Black Wolf is sort of... He looks surprised, and I was as well. So, for me, it just... it made me laugh because of the performance of Bob Holt. The shock of it happening. And then the fact that he shoots him in the head afterwards as well.
Proper mafia-style murder.
Yeah, and then everything just collapses. And, it was very much a, oh, fuck, I need to wrap up this story because I've run out of time.
And budget.
But at the same time, I liked how simple a solution it was. And I liked that it took me by surprise. I was not expecting it.
Yeah.
It was kind of like whenever someone criticizes James Bond villains about the whole, you've got him right there.
Oh,
stop
right,
explaining your plan. Don't put him in an elaborate trap. Just fucking shoot him. And, it was that, but the good guy doing it to the villain.
I like the joke of it. The thing that bothered me is we've built the film on this idea that the evil character has used old technology. Man, for some reason in this universe, magic is good. Technology was bad because I guess it was the downfall of man. But
that's a very Lord of the Rings thing.
Well, Lord of the Rings doesn't bring back Nazi propaganda and tanks.
No, but it is very much... it's in there, it's just not as on the nose as it is in this film.
Well, we're fucked because we don't have real magic. We got Paul Daniels, we don't even have Paul Daniels anymore. We can't rely on David Copperfield and, shit magicians, because it's not real. We don't have any hope in our world, so it's nice to have fairies help you, but we don't. We're doomed mutants in the future, according to this film.
Yeah. When you watch something like Star Wars or Lord of the Rings and it does the opening scroll or the opening prologue, do you sit there and wait for all that to finish? And then do you go, yeah, it didn't happen though, did it?
No, but in the case of something like that, I'm not annoyed because it's not... films that say the solution to humanity's problems is something that doesn't exist in the real world. The things that happen in a Star Wars, it's about man's ability to be good and save the day and not go and be evil and resist temptation and evil. That's, we can resist things. We can go on diets and jog or not murder people. What we in real life, this says either it's weird. This kind of ties into why the ending's so fucking odd. The whole film is technology is bad and it's been resurrected by an evil wizard and its propaganda's been used again to enslave mutants and it's an evil is reigning again. But then the technology is then the thing that helps defeat the bad guy. Like a gun is whipped out, and it's
That's what made me laugh though was the fact that all this build up of like it's pushing against technology, and then he just pulls a gun and shoots it.
So like, it's funny, but I guess it's kind of a wanky. It makes me sort think of oh, we've done a flip on you. Oh.
It's, I mean, it's very not that, but the message of the film is very like magic is almost a stand-in for like love. It's a very like hippie kind of message. Well,
that's it. That's what I didn't get. I wasn't getting, oh, love conquers all, magic shit, and elves conquer. Like there was nothing.
I mean,
all films are like relate back to humanity and mankind, and if they have a message, it has to be something tangible. It can't be magic saves the day. But in this case, that's not what it says. It says technology can be used to save the day, and sometimes it's horrible guns as well.
The ending of the film is that one great joke in Raiders of the Lost Ark where that guy is like slinging his sword around and showing off, and then Indiana Jones just pulls his gun and shoots him in front of everyone.
But it's as if that guy, instead of having a sword, had loads of guns and was waving them around instead of a sword. But I don't know, like, Abby, you said you felt like, what did you feel about this? Was it clever and funny, or was it a bit? Oh, is that it?
I didn't say it was clever. I just said it was funny.
What do you think, Abby?
You mean the big finish?
Is this a good conclusion? Like Jamie thinks it was funny and stuff, but do you think it was? Like, what do you think?
By that point, I was just glad that it was ending.
Like the come down from a trip, you're like, oh, I could think again.
And to expect a strong finish of something that hadn't been strong at any point would have been a bit much anyway.
It had all been kind of, it all kind of meanders to a conclusion that you don't know how it's going to conclude. And then him pulling the gun is like, fuck it. Just whatever.
Yeah, so all the mutants' army have sort of disbanded because their leader's dead. And our main heroes who are still alive are all like, it's basically because Necron is killed by
Eleanor,
yeah. So Eleanor kills Necron because she's been mind controlled and she's been fucking kidnapped. And there's a whole revelation, we did talk about it, that where Black Wolf's wife is like, no, don't be a dick, don't kill her. She's like, but, you know, our three left heroes, Weehawk, Avatar, and Eleanor, they just sit on their stupid round camel things and go, so you go off, you take over Weehawk and rule the kingdom. Me and Eleanor are going to have sex and start our own kingdom.
Yeah, somewhere. That was another thing that I was like, what? Like, at that point, I just sort of bought into the idea that this film was quite silly and that it was just sex jokes, the end.
Like, the joke I liked at the end was when Weehawk was kind of noble and like, oh, so you guys are getting married, are you? And it's like, well, don't pin me down to marriage. I may be thousands of years old, but I like the idea that Avatar's like, I can't get married to this same woman. Fuck right off. I may have mentored her and taught her magic, but I can't just be married. No.
I mean, the last line of the film, though, is an innuendo.
What was it?
It's him. What does he say? Because she calls him on it, and then that's the end. Is her like?
Oh, she implies they should fuck, and he's like, "Oh, come on, yeah. No,
no, no, no." He says something that is like a double entendre, and then she
goes, and he's like, "She's oh, come like, on. Yeah." But he dismisses it.
The boulder thing.
Oh yeah, it's about him being older and bolder. Yeah.
Ah.
The hell does he say though? It's something like we should
get off. With each other.
She gets stuck in or whatever. Yeah. It's a thing that can be interpreted as let's get down to fucking, and she's like, oh, you're getting older, I'm bolder, and he's like, I meant we need to go and do this, and she's like, yeah, yeah, and then it ends, and I was like, wait, goodness.
It wasn't completely out of the blue though, because there was that bit earlier on where he goes, yeah, you just sit there for a couple of hours.
There's definitely a suggestion of him being a dirty old man about this young elf princess
as we stare into a cleavage.
Yeah,
it's raunchy and poor, like British beach postcardy, and but it's also you know, a Dungeons and Dragons story. It's also a kind of lofty allegory for the folly of war and propaganda and religion. I mean,
there's a lot stuffed into an hour and 20 minutes and not very much money. And I
it's
kind
value
of, like,
for time, isn't it? It's value and effort for 120 minutes of... There's a lot of shit in there.
I sort of admire the ambition of what Bakshi's trying to include, and the amount of influences he's pulling from all kinds of different, like, areas of pop culture and history. But at the same time, like, I wish it, like Gabby said, that it was more focused on one or two of the things it's doing, and it, rather than kind of cramming everything into the short runtime and sort of
have a cohesive story where everything links and has a point to it, rather than
not even necessarily
things
that, but have a like on. Like, it's the consistency of the tone or of the style. Oh,
yeah,
well,
it definitely needed to be more consistent and focus.
Because there were
something.
A couple of times when, you know, it's only an hour and 20 minutes, and it's not like it feels long, but there were a couple of moments where I was like, I don't know what's happening, I'm lost. Like, and I, you know, I usually don't necessarily care if I'm able to, like, follow the plot of a film or whatever the first time I watch it. Like, it's more the...
But you should have the intrigue. Like, sometimes
yeah,
it was intriguing.
Yeah, engaged enough that yeah. you're... Yeah, whereas, like, there were times when I'm like, some of this looks cool, but I don't know what I'm supposed to be thinking about any of this anymore.
Yeah. Abby, do you want to go first with final thoughts and a metaphor? Because I feel like you were the most, I don't care and I don't know what's happening.
It's one of those things where they tell you you're going to get a free something. All you have to do is give them your credit card information so that they can charge you later.
There's a lot of sign-ups and email and mother's maiden name and passwords.
And you just take one look at it and go, nope. You sort of, the whole story of it unfolds in your head in a couple of split seconds, and then you just discredit the whole thing entirely.
I feel like Abby probably has the response that the majority of people would have watching this, especially in 2018 plus. Like...
I think that's fair, actually. It takes a bold adventurer to actually force his friends to sit down and watch it.
Yeah, I wouldn't. This isn't one I would watch with people, and I probably wouldn't watch it again.
I don't think you'd watch it with people or on your own. I don't think either one is... Like, if you sat down and watched this on your own, maybe you'd watch it as, like, an art student for some ideas. It could definitely influence things. Apparently it influenced
Adventure Time. I can see the links there. Yeah, I saw there's supposedly, like, a big influence on Adventure Time. And I mean, Ralph Bakshi generally, in terms of, like, his animation style and the kind of content he has in a lot of his films, has had a big influence on even, like, mainstream animation.
Yeah, he's not up there with, like, Terry Gilliam, but he's close. He's that sort of, oh, it's a style, it's a type of thing, it's a vibe, there's a lot of cool ideas that you can like. And
it's kind of like enjoy. A much less kid-friendly Don Bluth.
Yes, a much
he does kind of yeah. non-mainstream, very yeah. unique animation style, and, like, the way he uses animation to say things or tell a particular type of story has had a big influence. I mean, things that came after this, like, you know, heavy metal or whatever, and you see references to Bakshi and his stuff in a lot of other things. And I think there's definitely, like, there's a reason for that. Like, his stuff has merit, but I do feel like this isn't one of his strongest, but it does stand out just in terms of being an odd artifact of, like, animation history. I mean, it's not his worst film, because that's Cool World.
Oh, that's terrible.
That's fucking awful. But,
but Abby, you were saying, basically, it's like you've been offered half a free Subway, but it's not even a flavour you like, and you'd have to sign up and, you know, give your mortgage, and there's too much faff for what will be something you're not even going to want and enjoy, so why bother?
You'd have to agree to subscribe to regular emails, and you'd keep getting them, but you wouldn't bother clicking unsubscribe. You'd just delete them and then be annoyed every time you keep getting them.
Yep.
So it's a big don't watch, it was not worth it from you.
Yes.
It's a shame. I'm sorry I wasted your time. You didn't necessarily hate it. You just it wasn't for you, right? It wasn't like, oh, this frustrates me and it's horrible and sexist, right? It was just not for you.
Weirdly, it's not one of those ones where it was sort of sexist, but at the same time, Eleanor, she owned it.
She wasn't just a floozy and a victim. Go on, yeah.
She wasn't weak. She did stand up for herself, and it was just the way that she was dressed, which is unusual. Usually, they go all the way and just completely undercut.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It was a lot less. Like, it was still kind of pervy because it's Ralph Bakshi, but it was less outright like sexist or insulting than I was actually expecting it to be. Especially when she first appeared, I was like, "Oh Christ, this is going to be something."
But in fact, it wasn't as sexist as like on the buses. Like it wasn't
fuck no.
misogynistic. It was just a bit raunchy, and that's better than
no. She's
that's
I mean
commendable in a way.
She really. I would say of all the characters, she's the one who has an arc. Like, she's the one who does develop, because she goes from sort of giggly floozy to...
My father's dead. The robot that killed him is our ally. And now I've killed him, and I've been mind-controlled and imprisoned, and I can't control my magic, and I've got a gargoyle attacking me. You know, she has shit going on.
And so unusually for a film of this type from the period, it's actually just the story problems that really bother me. The other stuff I could possibly reconcile if the story was just there.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. Maybe some of the filling of this free thing you're getting... I've turned it into a sandwich metaphor, I apologise. You did not say sandwich. You said three things. Part of what you might get for free, you're happy with, but you don't want it all, and you're certainly not giving all your credit card details to get it. And that's fine. But Jamie, anyway, do you want to have your final thoughts and conclude?
I was going to say, just because I pointed out a couple of really dark scenes earlier, there's another that I missed. The little fairy singing songs to the horrible goblin soldiers. And then when she finishes, they point a gun at her and she starts sadly taking off her fucking clothes.
That's so funny.
And then it cuts away. I was like, Jesus Christ, this is really not... sitting well with me.
They're all bigger than her as well. What are you gonna do? She'd be like a fleshlight. Sorry.
It's such an oddly dark film. I mean, it's not odd because, again, Ralph Bakshi makes dark films, but I'm surprised that it's like rated a PG.
Well, it's.
But, I mean.
Yeah, it was. I think it was also. It was less tame at the time. Like in the 70s, there hadn't been the same things we've seen now. So it was a bit more bloody hell. This isn't for kids, you know.
Yeah, and also I think like ratings and stuff on animated stuff was a lot looser than it is now.
Yeah, because the violence factor is a cartoon. So what can you? It's not real.
But I think the metaphor that I've sort of pieced together is. Taken from the art portfolio one. So
that's kind of where I was going with it as well. Go on.
It is like college or like sixth form, like 17, 18-year-old art student has put together, like been working on sort of disparate pieces throughout the year for like coursework.
Yeah.
And singularly, they're all like kind of cool and they're very different. Some of them aren't as good as others, but they all have like a level of merit to them. But at the end of the year, when it's coming up to like the coursework deadline, they've realized that they were supposed to have like a cohesive theme for all of it. And they're like, oh, fuck, I haven't. I've just been doodling. Yeah. So they like really quickly try and like organize all of these pieces of work into like something that makes sense.
Yeah. And they retroactively try and fit it together. I had this idea and it all worked like this.
Yeah, see, because of this, and they're like just kind of twisting all their work into something that kind of makes a point. But it's all good enough that they do get a fairly decent passing grade.
They were taking the piss a bit because it doesn't work.
Because they were just dicking around because, like, us art, innit? It's a bit of a doss.
Having been on an art course and having been and been with people who've had similar situations. Like, it is exactly that. It's a massively beautiful portfolio of work. Like, it's sexy fantasy shit. It's cool monster stuff. It's loads of different ideas. Some of it's kiddie fantasy, some of it's like allegories for history and post-apocalyptic stuff. It's Vikings
and elves.
Some
of it's an excuse to draw tits.
Yeah, it's just some of it's just literally doodling boobies. So, and you look at that going, man, you're a great illustrator. Oh, this is awesome. And you, but storyteller? Not sure. Like, this doesn't all fit. And it's exactly, it's your metaphor, I think, is exactly right. It's that. And I think if I slid the portfolio over to Abby, she'd flick through the first three pages and go, yeah, that's good, but that's enough for
me. At the same time, though, the reason that it doesn't make cohesive sense is just because that student dicked around for too long and then only had, like, had they worked on it, like, been able to work on it for a longer time, it would have put together something really, like, complete, and it would have been great, but they didn't.
Yeah, this is an art, like, student who went on a foundation course for 1 year to get a flavour of what they wanted to do, when they should have done an animation course for like 3 or 4 years and a big old puff. Like, that's the problem, isn't it? It's a budget and time and.
Yeah, just... I think I get the impression that a lot of it wasn't necessarily Ralph Bakshi's fault. More no. That, you know, I can't imagine a studio even back in the '70s giving him much in terms of like time or money to do something like this.
And also, who are you appealing to? Like 13-year-old? It's not a big enough demographic to give it more money. Like, you have to have the audience. And in the '70s, it wasn't necessarily there. I think now, if this type of project was being made, it would have a bigger, broader appeal.
Yeah, there was like the idea of adult or older than children focused animated anything wasn't.
It's marketable.
It didn't have the weight that it has now.
Yeah. So that's what we all thought of Wizards, and. I think that's it. I think we've chewed it over enough. There's certainly a lot left that we haven't talked about that's worth seeing. Probably just put it on and see what you make of it. That's the
I think if you like weird, more oddball animation or darker stuff, it's worth at least having a go or taking a look at Ralph Bakshi's other stuff. Just, you know, read
just,
up on it a
just
bit
like
first
weird
and prepare
shit.
Yourself.
Yeah, don't expect too much. Just, that's it. Just give it a go if you're interested. If you're not, it's not one of those must-see things.
If you are very easily offended, this is probably a good place to start with Ralph Bakshi rather than diving in.
what was the one? There's like one that has coon in the title, or coon skins or something, and it's just like, oh
yeah,
my god.
Yeah. It's
amazing.
Something. I mean...
Yeah, I haven't seen coon skins, but I thought... Four, in this case, three white people aren't talking about an animation of a literal black exploitation by a white animator.
Or Fritz the Cat, which, certainly has an appeal to certain types of people.
Well, Crumb as a comic artist is interesting. I don't know. We're not here to talk about that. Yeah. That's the end of the podcast. We've discussed Wizards. Next time, a different thing. Probably a film, right, guys? Probably a film. We'll keep with films, because that's the name of the podcast. Goodbye for now.
Bye-bye.